You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Brian Wolfmiller, Larry Rast, and Will Wheaton at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Early bird registration is $135. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Making the Case, July 23rd and 24th in Chicago.
It's not possible for a world to emerge where Black Lives Matter if it's under capitalism. And it's not possible to abolish capitalism without a struggle against national oppression and gender oppression.
That's Alicia Garza, co-founder of Black Lives Matter, speaking at an annual meeting called Left Forum. If you look into the ideas and the influences of the founders of Black Lives Matter, you will find out that there's a lot of not only anti-capitalism, but anti-Americanism. So how is it that this organization has gained a reputation and a lot of widespread support as merely another civil rights organization? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about the ideas and influences of Black Lives Matter's founders. Scott Walter joins us. He's president of the Capital Research Center and author of a recent column for First Things titled "The Founders of Black Lives Matter." Scott, welcome to Issues Etc.
Great to be here, Todd.
How do you account for the popularity of Black Lives Matter?
Well, I think there's two things. One is goodwill, and the other is fear. The goodwill comes from the ordinary Americans who don't have any animus against people of color, and when they see on their TV sets what appears to be police brutality, you know, they recoil in horror and are sympathetic to folks who could suffer such abuse. Now, that's the goodwill part. The fear part, on the other hand, is what you see in our big cities like Washington, where I am. You see Black Lives Matter signs all over the place for fear that a mob is going to trash your business or home. And similarly, when you see the big corporations kowtowing, I think that too is a function of fear, although it's also in part a function, of course, of younger, hyper-ideological people working for those corporations. But mainly, again, I think people at the top are not that badly politicized. It's that they're scared of the mobs, including the internal mobs at their businesses and social media mobs.
What is the biggest myth about Black Lives Matter?
I think the biggest myth about Black Lives Matter is that it's about police brutality. The founders of Black Lives Matter couldn't be clearer, if you actually dig into what they say, that police brutality is not remotely the main thing. This fits with one of the most important left-wing principles articulated by an SDSer originally. The issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. That is to say, any particular issue that pops into public consciousness for the ordinary person, where you can use to manipulate ordinary persons, you know, that's nice, but it's not really central. The central thing is changing the society completely. And that's what the founders of Black Lives Matter are about. Whatever the average person who might say, well, sure, I support Black Lives Matter, or yes, I believe Black Lives Matter. That's separate from what the leadership is thinking and aiming at.
What can you tell us about the origins of Black Lives Matter?
It started in 2013, sort of spontaneously. Folks will remember that is when the verdict came down in the Trayvon Martin case. Trayvon Martin was a young black man, and George Zimmerman, a neighborhood watch Hispanic, had killed him, and the question was whether Zimmerman would get off. When he did get off because of the jury, you had three radical black organizers, as they call themselves, who first, Alicia Garza, coined the phrase in a public posting. She wrote a love letter, she said, to black people. She coined Black Lives Matter. Her friend Patrice Cullors turned that into the hashtag, which became highly popular. And a third radical black woman, Opal Tometi, started building the BlackLivesMatter.com website and organizing folks online. That was 2013. 2014, you have the Ferguson case. That's Michael Brown, young black man who roughed up a local East Indian immigrant in his shop, and then a little bit later got into a tussle with police, and he tried to attack a policeman. The policeman shot him, and then there were protests and even riots in Ferguson, Missouri, as a result of that for some time afterwards. That gave a huge leap upward in the organizing of this still somewhat loosely organized movement.
So let's walk through some of the co-founders and their views, their influences, if we could. Tell us about Black Lives Matter founder Opal Tometi.
Sure. She is the daughter of Nigerian immigrants. So presumably, you know, in the case of her family, they don't have the kind of history that Black Lives Matter likes to talk about in America. She was raised in Phoenix, went to the University of Arizona, got a bachelor in history and a master's degree in communication and advocacy. She's been mostly involved in far-left immigration groups. And according to her BlackLivesMatter.com biography, she's a student of liberation theology and a transnational feminist.
What do we know about co-founder Patrice Cullors?
Patrice Cullors is now executive director of the Black Lives Movement, Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation, which is the leading organization in the movement. And she is quite radical. In her 2017 memoir, she titled it When They Call You a Terrorist. And from the very opening page, she was citing Assata Shakur, who is a domestic terrorist and a cop killer, and lines that Shakur famously wrote that echoed Marx's Communist Manifesto, "We have nothing to lose but our chains." She was born in Van Nuys, California, and then raised in a mostly Hispanic neighborhood in the San Fernando Valley. And she, too, was able to go and get both a bachelor's degree and a master's degree, so that doesn't sound terribly oppressed to me. But one of the people that she greatly admires is the feminist anarchist Emma Goldman, both because she was one of the first persons to defend homosexuality publicly and also because she had contempt for monogamy. Other people that she admires are Angela Davis, the Black Panther Party, the Republic of New Africa, which was a 60s violent communist organization. So she also asked Angela Davis, a very prominent black communist, to write the foreword to that memoir. And again, talking about the kind of privilege that Ms. Cullors has, the reason she was able to do her memoirs because when she was giving a talk on a panel on Martha's Vineyard, one of the wealthiest places in America, alongside Hollywood stars Danny Glover and Issa Rae, there was a book editor there, and he said, "Oh, well, we'd like to publish your memoir." Cullors has also gotten all kinds of honors, including a Fulbright scholarship. I guess I'm oppressed because I haven't gotten a Fulbright scholarship. Honorary doctorate from Clarkson University. She's been Glamour's Woman of the Year. Fortune magazine, supposedly oriented to the corporate community, a selected her as one of the world's greatest leaders. And then the last thing to be said about Cullors is that her real radicalization, I mean, she had left-wing schooling in California growing up, but her real radicalization came after high school when she studied at something called the Strategy Center, a very hard left group. And she explains that while she was there for a year being trained, "I read, I study, adding Mao, Marx, and Lenin to my knowledge of bell hooks, Lord, and Alice Walker." That center is run by a former Weather Underground man who spent months in prison for his violent crimes, including shooting at a police building back in the 60s. And he himself praises Mao Zedong, Lenin, Fidel, Che Guevara. So you see, that's the kind of background that she comes out of.
With all of that said, you say that the most radical of the founders is Alicia Garza. Why do you say that?
Well, she is the one who seems to be the most deeply embedded in the ideology side. So, for instance, a far-left publisher was putting out a new edition of a book with the wonderful title Revolution in the Air, 60s Radicals Turn to Lenin, Mao, and Che. They asked Garza to write the foreword, and she was happy to do that because when she was a young organizer, she'd read that very book, which is all about the best way to be a communist, crudely put. But in her foreword, she explains that when she was young and read the book, she hadn't yet studied much of the origins of the Marxist-Leninist tradition that I was loosely trained in. So she's in a way the most emphatic that she is a flat Marxist-Leninist. She's an expert on Lenin, Mao, Che, and the horrific, violent left-wing groups in America that took them for their inspiration. Now, she too grew up in California. She was born in San Rafael and later moved to a very posh town in Marin County. And again, like Fuller's, she self-identifies as queer and found herself in a hard left training program. In her case, it was something called SOUL, School of Unity and Liberation. And let me just give you a snippet of what she says that was, why that was so valuable for her. She explains it was much better than her left-wing Marxism she learned in college, because that was sort of plain Jane and not exciting like the real training she got. So she said, when I trained in sociology in college, we would read Marx and we would read de Tocqueville and all these economic theorists, but in a void. It never got mentioned in those college classes that social movements all over the world have used Marx and Lenin as a foundation to interrupt these systems that are really negatively impacting the majority of people. So, again, we need to use Marxism-Leninism to change the very system of America. Now, the final reason I would give Garza the nod of as being the most radical is that tattooed on her chest, she has these lines. I can't tell you who the hell set things up like this, but I can tell you that from now on, my resistance, my simple and daily and nightly self-determination may very well cost you your life. I believe her, so I give her the prize.
Is Black Lives Matter a civil rights organization?
I don't think that's fair to say, because in fact, of course, anyone who has studied the history of civil rights knows that there was a real split back in the 60s and ever since, namely between the Martin Luther Kings of the world who cared about civil rights within America's great tradition. King wanted America to live up to its ideals. But even then, you had the split with people like Stokely Carmichael, who, by the way, coined the term we now use of systemic racism. Carmichael had contempt for King. He left America, went to Africa, renamed himself after two different genocidal Marxist-Leninist tyrants in Africa. He wanted violence. He wanted total destruction of what America was about. And that is the tradition that the leaders of Black Lives Matter really come out of. They don't come out of Martin Luther King, let's treat everyone honorably and equally and justly under the law.
Is political violence baked into the ideology and the system of Black Lives Matter?
I think that's a very fair thing to say, precisely because of what I've just explained about how radical these leaders are. And by the way, at capitalresearch.org, you look up an article I did, Radical Lives Matter. It's much longer than the First Things version, has even yet more of how violent and radical these people's backgrounds, trainings, ideology is. At the same time, of course, the left always has this sort of oscillation back and forth between what's politically achievable and what they really want. So in the last year or two, precisely because people like I and Mike Gonzalez at the Heritage Foundation have been exposing all this radicalism, at the official BlackLivesMatter.com website, they've started scrubbing out some of the more nasty stuff, and they've toned down their rhetoric. Alicia Garza just wrote her memoir. It's very plain vanilla, wouldn't scare anybody. So they go back and forth between what they say in what they say, between the hard radical and the nicer, because of course it would be political death to say these kinds of things out in public. And now that they've achieved some success in popularity and politically speaking.
Finally, many well-meaning Americans, as you mentioned at the outset, out of goodwill support Black Lives Matter. What is the one thing such citizens need to know about the organization?
I think it's precisely they need to understand the three women who quite accurately say that they founded this movement, and those women are extremist radicals with a fondness for literally genocidal tyrants. Those are not people to be trusted. Those are not people that should be sent millions of dollars from corporations or Americans of goodwill. We can all do better on policing and all kinds of things in our society, but we never want to be mixed up with extremists like those leaders of the movement.
Scott Walter is president of the Capital Research Center and author of a recent column for First Things titled The Founders of Black Lives Matter. You can read it and find out more about the Capital Research Center at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Scott, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Suzanne Venker is with us next. We're going to be talking about a recent column she's written titled President Biden Stokes America's Gender War. Stay tuned.
We need people who are well-educated enough to know what the Constitution means, what it says, how its principles work.
Dr. Robert George of Princeton University talking about his presentation on the Constitution and civic virtue at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
We need people who are willing to fight for those principles, to call out politicians, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they are Democratic or Republican, when they transgress against the Constitution. We need a people who are fit for liberty and fit for the rule of law under a Constitution like ours, a Republican polity like ours, established under the Constitution. So I'm really going to be talking about civic virtue and its relationship to constitutional structures and principles.
You can meet and hear Dr. Robert George at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is, lcmschaps@lcms.org.